You are Locked On Orioles, your daily podcast on the Baltimore Orioles, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hey guys, welcome to Locked On Orioles. This is the podcast for all your analysis of the Orioles from the clubhouse to the warehouse and beyond. It's all O's all the time. As always, I'm your host, Justin McGuire, and I'm glad you're here. Folks, today we are joined by Jonah Bierenbaum. He is senior MLB writer for The Score, and he's also host of the Expand the Zone podcast. He's going to talk to us about an article he recently wrote about the relationship between Adam Jones and Cedric Mullins. We'll get to that interview in just a second. First, I just want to remind everybody, though, that the Locked On Podcast Network is now locked on to college. We recently launched the college channel for the Locked On Podcast Network, so you can go and subscribe for free if you're a fan of Alabama, Arkansas, Tennessee, Florida, Kentucky, Oklahoma, Baylor, Penn State, Oregon, or BYU. All those podcasts are available at Apple Podcasts, Google Play, and other places podcasts are available. Hey, everybody. Welcome back to Locked On Orioles. We are joined now by Jonah Bierenbaum. He is a senior writer for The Score in Toronto, and he's also host of the Expand the Zone podcast, so you should check that out. Jonah, the reason I had you on today, you wrote a story last week about the relationship between Cedric Mullins and Adam Jones, and I thought that was pretty interesting because you know, this is an Orioles podcast, and you're in Toronto. You've seen it up close how bad the Orioles are. This has been a horrible, brutal season for the Orioles, and there hasn't been a whole lot of positives to come out of it. One of the few positives that has come out of it, though, I think, is Cedric Mullins, and I think a lot of fans are excited about him. Think he's the center fielder of the future. I don't know that he's going to be a star or anything, but I think people think he can be a good, solid major league player for the Orioles for years to come. So anyway, I wanted to ask you just about the genesis of this story. Why did you decide to write about the relationship between these two guys?
Well, I found it pretty fascinating. I think it's somewhat atypical in a season where clearly there are no delusions of making the postseason, and there haven't been for months. You would think that maybe an organization would be inclined to keep a player like Adam Jones, someone who's meant so much to the organization and an impending free agent, in center field, the position he's played his entire career in Baltimore, to potentially keep his value as a free agent as high as possible. But instead, they approached him and asked him to defer to the younger player who's going to be a part of their future, a part of the youth movement that has now clearly started in Baltimore. And, you know, he was very gracious about it. And it just got me thinking, you know, sort of what the nature of the relationship is between these two guys, between an icon and his heir apparent, and you know that they're separated by 10 years in age, and you know, it just to me seemed like a very interesting dynamic between the two players.
Yeah. So, did you get a chance to talk to both guys?
I did. Yeah.
So, tell us what, like, when you talked to Adam Jones and talked to him about this, what were his feelings about? Does he embrace that mentor role, or does he see this as just something that you do when you're a veteran player?
No, he I think embraced it pretty wholeheartedly. He told me about sort of back in his day when he was coming up with the Seattle Mariners, when he arrived at his first big league spring training in 2006, he leaned on veteran guys. He leaned on guys like Willie Bloomquist, Raul Labañez, Jose Vidro, Jose Guillen, you know, and then 2 years later when he got to Baltimore, Jay Payton was the guy who served in that mentor role for him, and he told him, he impressed upon him, you know, when you get to be a little bit older, it's sort of incumbent on you to show the younger guys the way. And it was interesting because Adam actually suggested that the responsibility for sort of beginning that dynamic of mentor-mentee, it's on the younger player to approach the older player. But when that younger player comes up to you, you know, you got to be willing to dispense those nuggets of veteran wisdom. You got to show them the way a little bit. And he said Mullins, to his credit, has been, you know, very enthusiastically approaching him, asking him a lot of questions, a ton of questions, he said. And Adam said, you know, I'm not trying to be his dad or anything like that. I'm just trying to be a guy he can lean on when he needs it, because it can be, you know, a very dizzying process coming up to the big leagues as a 23-year-old. You know, it's a very dramatically different lifestyle. So Adam Jones has just said, look, I'm going to be there for him when he needs me.
What did Mullins have to say about the relationship? He's a guy who, in his brief time in Baltimore, has I think, impressed a lot of fans with his attitude. He seems very mature for his age. He seems like a guy who has a very good attitude. It seems like he's clearly a hard worker. We know he's made the majors despite a lot of odds against him. What was his attitude about Adam Jones? What did he have to say about the veteran, right fielder?
Yeah, it was very interesting because, I first approached Cedric and asked him sort of an open question, who are some of the veteran guys you've been leaning on? And he volunteered Jones. Like, he was like, oh, Adam Jones is the guy. And he said, they've been sitting down. He's been showing him sort of the tricks of the trade, so some of the nuances about playing center field at Camden Yards. And, he was effusive in his praise of Jones. And, he credited him for, because that's the thing, right, is that it'd be so easy for Jones to sort of turn the cold shoulder. He's the kid who supplanted him, took away his position on the verge of free agency. But he hasn't been like that at all. He's been very gracious. He's been very forthcoming, very welcoming. And, Mullins recognized and acknowledged all of that.
Now, when you talk to these guys, I know this is probably a difficult thing, but do you get any sense of frustration about just how badly the season has gone for them? Did you get into any of that, or was that outside the scope of what you were trying to do?
It was a little bit, but I'll be honest with you. They're so deep into such a dismal season that really any delusions of making the playoffs have been gone for so long, really since, I got to say the middle of May, that I think they're sort of resigned to this reality. They're playing out their season now, and for a guy like Mullins, this is pretty exciting, right? Because even though the Orioles are collectively a disaster, this is his first crack at the big league. So that's very exciting. That gives him, quite a bit of pep in his step every day. And then for a guy like Adam Jones, he has other motivations to come into the clubhouse every day and be as motivated as he can, contribute to the best of his abilities, because, he's staring down his first ever foray into free agency this winter, and he's got a contract to play for. So guys are motivated. There's probably an undertone of frustration there, but, the guys are pretty much resigned to their fate, and they have been for months now. So, they're just being professional about their job, showing up to work every day, trying to do the best that they can. They haven't had a lot of success, but, they're professionals.
Now, you mentioned you talked to Cedric Mullins about which guys have you looked up to, and he mentions Adam Jones. Did he talk about any other veterans? Are there other guys on this team? Not that there are a whole lot of veterans left at this point, but did he talk about other players on the team who he's looked to for advice or guidance in any way?
No, and that's the thing, right, is that, over the past few weeks and months, more and more veteran talent has been shipped out, definitely on the pitching side of things, and then also Manny Machado and guys like that. So, no, Mullins specifically pointed to Jones and didn't really – he was so effusive in his praise of Jones that he didn't have any more superlatives for anybody else.
And what did Jones have to say about Mullins? Obviously, he's given him advice and stuff, but did he have positive things to say about Mullins? Like I said, he seems like a guy with a really good attitude, a really good work ethic. Did Jones have positive things to say about him in those regards?
Yeah, and specifically he pointed to his poise. And just in my own conversations with Mullins, because I spoke to him on successive days, but he's such a calm, cool, collected cat, man. Like, he's not frazzled by anything. He really comports himself with the poise of a veteran player. And, I think that Jones has certainly taken notice of that. When you're a rookie coming up for your first taste of the big leagues, I would imagine it's tremendously overwhelming. And, maybe you try to do too much, or you're a little overamped, you're taking too many swings in the cages, you're lifting a little bit too much, just trying to prove that you belong. But Mullins, to his credit, seemed very, very composed every time. He was very comfortable just sort of, hanging out with the guys, with the veteran guys in the clubhouse, and being himself and not putting too much pressure on himself to deliver. Jones, I think, really noticed that. He really, really belabored the poise that this 23-year-old is showing.
Yeah, he really has been. I mean, and like you said, it's not an easy situation for him coming into a team that's really bad. I mean, obviously that's, in some ways, the reason he has this opportunity is because they're so bad. But still, it can't be easy to, to be a guy coming for your first taste of Major League Baseball and playing on a team that basically doesn't have a chance to win most nights. So that's got to be a hard thing. But Cedric Mullins is a guy, like I said, he I know his background is such he played at a small college, Campbell University. He was a guy who wasn't expected to be a major leaguer, and he's gotten there through his hard work. So it's not surprising to see that he has a good attitude and that he has a good approach to things.
Absolutely. He sort of had the odds stacked against him. He wasn't a high draft pick. I think he went in the 13th round. There wasn't a ton of prospect pedigree there. He never cracked any of the, say, top 100 lists at Baseball America or Baseball Prospectus or anything like that. And the tools aren't especially loud, but that is the sort of the one advantage of the Orioles' dismal season, is that they can give opportunities to less heralded prospects like Cedric Mullins. And to his credit, he's done an unbelievable job acquitting himself at the major league level thus far through his first 15 games or so. His OPS is around 900. It's really been a slam dunk of a debut sort of first couple weeks in the big leagues for him. And in the midst of what has been a dumpster fire of a season for the Orioles, guys like Mullins give fans a little bit of optimism, I think, about the future.
Yeah, and one thing I think is interesting to talk about in this regard, and I don't know that you have any special insights into this as somebody who's in Toronto, but this is something that's been talked about a lot. We know that Adam Jones decided at the trade deadline that he did not want to be traded. And with a player with 10-5 rights, that was his right. I, for one, and I think most of the fans that I've discussed it with and people I've discussed it with are fully respectful of that and understand that was his right and he did what he wanted to do, and we should respect that and not criticize him for it. But that means, of course, that he is going to play out the spring this year and become a free agent. I guess one of the questions I have is, is there any chance Adam Jones comes back in a Baltimore uniform? He likes Baltimore, obviously. I think the Dan Duquette probably doesn't want him around, but we don't know if Dan Duquette's going to be around. Is he going to go to ownership and try to get like a couple year contract or something? What do you think Adam Jones' future holds?
I think you're absolutely right in suggesting that Adam Jones is tremendously comfortable in Baltimore. He's got two kids. That's where he spends his summers, even though he still lives in San Diego in the off season. But, and I do believe that he'd like to continue his relationship with the Orioles. I just don't know that that's going to be mutual. He's 33 years old. He doesn't make a ton of sense given where they are on the win curve. And they have guys like Cedric Mullins who are prepared to take that step and supplant the veteran players. And they're trying to get younger as an organization. I just don't see it happening. I think it's possible. And I suspect that the Orioles might even be a little bit wary of issuing him a qualifying offer on the chance that he might accept it. Because I don't think that they truly feel that he has a place in their future. But, that they may not fall on the same side there. I think Adam Jones may want to stay and the organization may not want him. But ultimately, I don't see it happening. But I think there's a remote chance.
Yeah, and it's going to be interesting. Like I said, I think I certainly agree with you that just from a pure baseball perspective, it doesn't make any sense to try to bring him back. I guess the one argument in favor of it would be, like we talked about earlier, there's hardly any veteran leadership left on this team, right? There's aren't anybody who has much experience outside of maybe Chris Davis, who is going to be there for a while, but he's been performed so poorly, it's hard to see him being much of a leader. So do they see any advantage in that of just having a veteran presence while these young guys get broken in over the next few years? That's to me the one argument. I don't think it's a very strong argument, but it's the one thing you could kind of say in favor of maybe trying to bring him back for a couple of years.
Yeah, the intangibles are always nice, but when it comes down to the bottom line, I don't know that it's necessarily worth the financial commitment that it would require to retain Adam Jones, because even though he's 33 and, may potentially be attached to drastic compensation as a free agent, he's still a decent player. He's probably hovering around a two-win player at this point in his career, especially having been bumped from a premium position like center into right field now. So I just don't see it happening from the Orioles' perspective, but there's a chance because, like you said, the intangibles are there and he's meant so much to the organization that it's possible they retain him just to retain a guy like Adam Jones. But, we'll have to see what happens.
Yeah. And so much of this and this gets a little insidery in terms of the, warehouse politics, but so much of this, I think, is going to be determined by who is actually making these decisions. Like I said, if it's Dan Duquette or really anybody, any new GM they would bring in, they're likely not going to want to bring Adam Jones back. But can Adam Jones get to the Angelos family and make a pitch? I know Peter Angelos is very Very much a fan of Adam Jones. And is there a chance he goes there and makes a pitch directly to them with and you know, supersedes the GM position, which has happened in Baltimore before? I think so. There's just so many moving parts anytime you're talking about what's going to happen with the Orioles in the offseason.
Absolutely. Anytime it's difficult amid sort of some of the dysfunction that has been known to happen within sort of the Orioles brass to have any confidence that they'll necessarily make the sound decision. But it's entirely possible that if Dan Duquette gets replaced and he has a successor that isn't necessarily as indebted to Jones as, say, Dan Duquette would be, that Jones makes a direct appeal to ownership. You never know. Those possibilities certainly exist. Were I placing a bet on it, I would say Adam Jones is not wearing an Orioles uniform next year, but we will find out.
All right. Well, let me ask you one final thing. That most of the people I talk to on this podcast are, Orioles people who are following the team closely, Orioles analyst types. You're an outsider, somebody who's in Toronto, not an Orioles person in particular. What is the view of this team? Are people outside of Baltimore surprised at just how badly things have gone? Are people laughing about it? Are people like shocked by it? What's the general reaction, do you think, of this horrendous season the Orioles are having?
Yeah, frankly, I don't think there's much shock. I think generally there's a stigma surrounding the Orioles because, for a number of reasons, but one, the meddlesome nature of the Angelos families and not allowing perhaps Dan Duquette to have the latitude that he should as a general manager. The fact that, even when they were enjoying that stretch of prosperity there, where they went to the playoffs, I want to say twice in a 4-year span, they overperformed their expected record considerably throughout that time. The investments they've made on the free agent market have really not panned out. Deals that come to mind, the Ubaldo Jimenez one, the Andrew Cashner deal and Alex Cobb deals from this past winter were misses in my estimation. And then, of course, the albatross of a deal that they gave Chris Davis. He's only now in the second season of a 7-year, $161 million deal, and he's inarguably the worst player in baseball right now. I don't think there's much shock that the Orioles have plummeted this year. I mean, it's pretty remarkable that they have been this bad, because it's pretty insane putting up like a .280 winning percentage. But I think a lot of people from outside felt that this was sort of inevitable, that the Orioles were always succeeding in spite of themselves and not because of sound decisions that the baseball operations department had made. But to their credit, I think Dan Duquette did a tremendous job liquidating his assets ahead of this year's deadline. Nice haul, the 5 prospects from the Dodgers and the Manny Machado trade, the Kevin Gausman deal as well. I was a little surprised he didn't move Dylan Bundy, but I mean, Bundy's also at the nadir of his value because he can't stop giving up home runs. But it does seem like maybe there could be a pot of gold at the end of this rainbow. But it's definitely been a mess for a long time now, and it's going to take some time moving forward to sort of get out of this.
Yeah, and I think that's honestly, I talked about this on the podcast last week, but I think there is a feeling among a lot of people around the Orioles, especially the more sort of sophisticated fans, people who sort of understand things a little bit better than the superficial level, that this may be the best thing that could have happened to them, because they can no longer delude themselves into thinking, oh, we're just a move or two away from being a good team. They have bottomed out in a way that few teams ever do, but it's forced them to make the tough decisions that they'd put off for so long. And that ultimately is probably the best thing for the long-term health of the franchise.
Yeah. And they could have easily decided this past offseason to move Manny Machado, to move Zach Britton, although the Achilles injury obviously complicated that. And they decided to reinvest, and that just compounded the bad decisions that Dan Duquette and the Angelos family had made over recent years. And they paid the price for it, both financially and in terms of, not being able to start a rebuild that was long overdue and really needed to happen. But they are finally, after so long, moving in the right direction. So that's a reason for optimism in Baltimore.
Yeah, and of course, a lot of Orioles fans now are starting to get excited about the possibility of having the number one overall pick in the draft next year, which is something they haven't had since 1989. So
Silver linings, absolutely.
Yeah, exactly. Well, you know, you got to look for them where you can get them, and maybe that's maybe that's the opportunity to get the, you know, the next superstar in Orioles uniform if things work out. So anyway, Jonah, thank you so much for talking with us today. If people want to find you on Twitter, what's your handle there?
Yeah, it's my pleasure. And my Twitter handle is Birenball. That's Birenball.
Okay. All right. Well, thanks, Jonah. I appreciate it.
Thanks so much.
And that's going to do it for another edition of Locked On Orioles. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.